Imagine looking at a legacy company that essentially just pours concrete and grades dirt for a living.
Right, laying asphalt, moving earth.
Yeah, exactly. And historically, if you're modeling out a heavy civil construction business, you are looking at a valuation multiple of maybe, I don't know, 6 times EBITDA on a good day.
Oh, yeah, it's a notoriously capital-intensive, super cyclical sector.
Right. But now, imagine that exact same company somehow convincing the public markets to value it like a high-growth software firm.
Bidding it up to a sus multiple.
Yes, commanding a multiple north of 21 times forward earnings. It sounds totally impossible, right? You'd assume there's just a massive pricing error on the screen.
Or a typo in your terminal.
Exactly. Well, today we are diving deep into Sterling Infrastructure. Ticker is STRL.
And honestly, it is one of the most fascinating valuation anomalies in the industrial space right now. I mean, if you are managing portfolio, you have definitely seen this movie before.
Oh, for sure. The classic value trap.
Right. The engineering and construction sector is just notorious for what looks like cheap value, right until, bam, a cyclical downturn hits, or, a massive fixed price municipal project goes totally sideways because of weather or scope creep.
Yeah, and then suddenly that cheap mid-single digit multiple just completely destroys capital.
Exactly. But Sterling is, they're aggressively challenging that historical precedent.
Which is exactly why we're doing this deep dive into their valuation and returns framework today. So we're synthesizing a massive stack of recent sell-side initiations, earnings updates, and some really great expert interviews.
Yeah, we're pulling from the latest research by Stifel, William Blair, Sidoti, D.A. Davidson, and AlphaSense.
And the mission here is to unpack exactly how a heavy construction company morphed into a mission-critical infrastructure platform. Because for you, as a sophisticated investor modeling this out, the primary objective is to stress test this multiple.
Right, we need to figure out if this is a true structural re-rating driven by, sustainable free cash flow and a mechanical M&A arbitrage strategy.
Or, and this is the big fear, if the market is just broadly mispricing the stock based on a massive AI data center sugar high.
Yeah, the sentiment wave. And, to even begin understanding how a dirt-moving company gets a software-like multiple, you really have to look at the 10-year valuation convergence.
The chart is honestly staggering.
It's wild. Back in 2022, Sidoti noted that Sterling traded at roughly 5 times enterprise value to EBITDA and about 6 times earnings per share.
So priced exactly as you would expect a pure play heavy highway contractor to be priced.
Exactly. Fast forward to 2026, and Stifel initiates coverage with the stock trading at roughly 21.5 times next 12 months EV to EBITDA.
It's just a multiple expansion of that magnitude. It doesn't happen just because the macro environment improves a bit.
No, absolutely not.
It requires a fundamental rewiring of the entire revenue engine. And that rewiring was led by their CEO, Joe Cutillo.
Right, and his strategy was entirely about subtraction before it was ever about addition.
I love that framing. They deliberately engineered an exit from those high-risk, low-bid, heavy highway projects. Like, if you look back at 2016, heavy highway, low-bid contracts made up nearly 95% of their entire business.
Wow.
Yeah. And today, it is just 9% of total revenue.
They systematically abandoned the traditional Department of Transportation bidding wars because, in that old model, you're competing against a dozen other firms to offer the lowest possible price to, build a highway interchange.
And the margins are just razor thin.
Razor thin. The municipality dictates the timeline, and literally any delay eats directly into your equity.
So Sterling basically replaced that toxic revenue with what they call their e-infrastructure segment.
Right, where data centers now represent over 65% of that segment's backlog.
So we have to establish what exactly the market thinks it's buying today, because the whole peer group classification is completely fractured.
Yeah, it's having an identity crisis.
Totally. Stifel's 2026 initiation data lays this out in really stark terms. So STRL currently trades at a massive 7.5 turn premium to traditional civil construction peers.
Right. So if you look at companies like Construction Partners or Granite Construction or Knife River.
Yeah, they're hovering around a 12.3 times EV to EBITDA average. Sterling is just completely detached from that group.
But simultaneously, though, Sterling still trades at a roughly 1.5 turn discount to specialty E&C peers.
The higher end guys.
Exactly. If you run the comps on Comfort Systems, EMCOR, and Quanta Services, those businesses are averaging anywhere from 19.6 times to well over 20 times.
I look at that spread and it feels like a legacy hardware company attempting to get priced at a SaaS multiple.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
Is the market suffering from an identity crisis here? Like, can a company that is fundamentally pouring concrete, moving dirt, and prepping physical sites genuinely maintain a specialty engineering multiple usually reserved for high-tech electrical contractors?
Well, the market isn't confused, actually. It's following the margin profile.
Okay, unpack that.
Investors aren't just paying up because management slapped the words data center into their earnings release. They are paying for a verifiable structural margin shift.
Right. The numbers back it up.
They do. Consolidated gross margins have stepped up from 17.1% in 2023 to 20.1% in 2024. And for the full year 2025, they hit 23.0%.
Wow.
And adjusted EBITDA margins have finally breached that critical 20% threshold, expanding roughly 400 basis points year over year to 20.2%.
So the earnings quality has decoupled from the civil peer group because the underlying economics have totally decoupled.
Exactly.
But explain the mechanics of that decoupling. Why is prepping a site for a data center so much more profitable than prepping a site for a highway? I mean, if the physical action moving dirt is largely the same.
That's the key question. It all comes down to the customer's priority. When you are bidding on a public highway, the state government's only priority is cost.
Sure. Lowest bidder wins.
Right. But when you are working with hyperscalers, you know, your Amazons, your Metas, your Googles, their only priority is schedule assurance.
Oh, because time is literally money for them.
Exactly. If a billion-dollar AI data center is delayed by 3 months because the foundation wasn't poured correctly or the site grading was off, the opportunity cost in lost AI compute is astronomical.
It dwarfs whatever the construction costs are.
Completely dwarfs it. Yeah. Therefore, hyperscalers are absolutely willing to pay a massive premium to a contractor who can practically guarantee that the site will be ready on time.
And Sterling commands that premium pricing because they actually have the track record of reliable execution on these massive, super complex sites.
Exactly.
Okay, that structural margin shift is compelling, but a 21.5 times multiple on a construction company is incredibly fragile if it isn't backed by actual cash generation.
Oh, yeah. Accrual accounting doesn't pay the bills.
Right. Sitting on a pile of high-margin contracts doesn't matter if all your cash is trapped in working capital. So the foundational reason STRL is allowed into that exclusive specialty E&C club really has to be its cash conversion.
And the cash flow metrics are exactly what validate the entire valuation framework here. If we pull the specific free cash flow data from Stifel and AlphaSense, Sterling's free cash flow conversion sits at 70.2% of EBITDA.
Wait, I need to stop you there.
Mm-hmm.
70% cash conversion in heavy construction.
Yeah.
That basically defies the laws of physics for this sector. Where is the catch?
Well, to understand how absurdly high that is, the civil peer average is only 46.1%.
Right.
Even the specialty peer average, those high-tech electrical contractors, is only 57.7%. Sterling is just blowing past both groups.
That's wild.
And management explicitly targets an 80% free cash flow to EBITDA conversion rate long term. They generated $440 million in operating cash flow in 2025 alone.
But how? You still have to buy excavators, you still have to maintain massive, heavy yellow iron, and you still have to float payroll while you wait for invoices to clear. How are they dodging the working capital trap that traditionally destroys E&C cash flows?
The shift to e-infrastructure fundamentally alters the working capital cycle itself. Think about it. When you work for a municipality, you might wait 90 to 120 days for some public works department to approve an invoice and actually cut a check.
And your cash is just trapped the whole time.
Exactly. Hyperscalers, conversely, have massive balance sheets and highly efficient accounts payable departments. You hit a milestone, you get paid.
Boom.
Furthermore, the project life cycles are completely different. Quick, intensive project turnarounds mean capital isn't locked up in endless multi-year highway projects where, you know, bad weather and bureaucratic red tape just eat your working capital alive.
But they are still operating a massive fleet of heavy equipment. I mean, that requires heavy capital expenditures, which should drag down free cash flow.
And that is where their technology adoption changes the math.
How so?
Sterling uses building information modeling, or BIM, alongside drone site mapping and equipment telematics.
Okay, so a lot of tech overlay.
Right. In traditional site prep, you grade the dirt, a surveyor comes out weeks later, finds an error, and you have to send the machines back in to rework it.
That sounds expensive.
It is. That rework burns diesel, labor, and machine depreciation. But by using drones to map the site daily and feeding that data directly into the GPS systems of the actual bulldozers, Sterling essentially eliminates rework.
Wow. So the machine literally knows exactly where to cut.
Exactly. They aren't just buying equipment. They're turning it over efficiently on high-margin, fast-moving projects. High fleet utilization means less redundant capital expenditure, which flows directly into that 70% cash conversion metric.
Okay, so that 70% cash conversion is really the proof of concept for the whole operational pivot.
Yeah, it's undeniable.
But, you know, sitting on $440 million in operating cash flow is a great problem to have, but it doesn't automatically grant you a 21x multiple.
No, it doesn't.
It is the deployment of that capital that is breaking the historical valuation models.
Uh-huh.
We have to look at the M&A multiple arbitrage strategy here, because this is really the engine sustaining the equity premium.
It's arguably one of the cleanest examples of capital allocation you'll find in the industrial space today. Oh, absolutely. Because Sterling's equity trades in the low 20s on next 12 months EBITDA, virtually any disciplined acquisition they make is instantly and massively accretive.
Because they're buying cheaper earnings.
Exactly. Management operates with a strict mandate. They only target companies with 15% or higher gross margins. Look at the historical track record under Joe Cutillo. They bought Plateau for roughly 5.6 times EBITDA.
Okay.
They bought Petillo for 5.0 times. They bought Drake Concrete for just 3.8 times.
Let's walk through the math on that so you, the listener, can really visualize the value creation here. Because it is a brilliant financial currency play.
It really is.
If your stock is valued at $20 for every dollar of earnings,
right,
and you use that highly valued currency to buy a private company whose earnings are priced at, say, $5.
Yeah.
The moment you consolidate those acquired earnings onto your own balance sheet, the public market values them at your $20 multiple.
Mm-hmm.
You are instantly quadrupling the recognized value of those acquired earnings.
It's a machine. That multiple spread is literally a machine for manufacturing shareholder value.
It's incredible.
But what we really need to focus on is how that strategy is evolving right now. The recent acquisition of CEC Facilities Group is a massive pivot for them.
Right, the CEC deal. Let's get into that.
They deployed $505 million to acquire CEC at an estimated 9.6 times 2025 EBITDA.
No, wait. A 9.6 times multiple is a huge step up from buying Drake Concrete at 3.8 times. Are they getting sloppy with their discipline just to maintain top line growth?
That's exactly what people asked. On the surface, it looks expensive compared to their history. However, D.A. Davidson's analysis points out that this 9.6 times multiple aligns perfectly with the premiums paid by the broader specialty peer group for top-tier electrical assets.
Oh, okay. Give me some comps.
For context, EMCR recently bought Miller Electric at about 10.8 times, and Quanta bought Cupertino Electric at roughly 9.3 times.
So they're stepping up in price because the asset class they're buying has fundamentally changed. Like, they aren't just buying dirt movers anymore.
Correct. They are buying vastly superior capabilities. CEC gives Sterling highly coveted electrical and mechanical, or E&M, capabilities, specifically geared for data centers.
Got it.
Management refers to this as adding a fourth leg to the stool. So this isn't just financial engineering for the sake of arbitrage. It's a strategic operational play.
Because the bottleneck has shifted.
Exactly. Electrical work is currently the biggest bottleneck in data center construction. By bringing these E&M capabilities in-house, Sterling is actively reducing its fixed price execution risk.
Because if you control the electrical contractor, you aren't waiting on some third party to finish their work before you can hit your own milestones.
Yeah.
You literally control the critical path of the project.
Exactly. They are moving from just prepping the exterior dirt to capturing a massive share of the highly complex mission-critical interior work.
That makes total sense.
And this cross-selling capability structurally improves the consolidated margin profile even further, which totally justifies the higher multiple they paid for CEC.
Okay, so taking all of these pieces, the 10-year margin expansion, the hyperscaler cash conversion dynamics, and this whole multiple arbitrage engine, how is the sell side actually modeling the forward valuation?
Yeah, that's where the rubber meets the road.
Right, because the street is looking at a pretty wide range of target prices based on 2027 estimates. And it seems like the disagreement isn't really about whether Sterling can execute. The disagreement is entirely about how the market will classify their identity going forward.
It really is. The spread in target prices is essentially a debate over whether that remaining 1.5 turn discount to specialty peers will completely close.
Let's run through the targets.
Sure. So Stifel initiates with a $486 target price, which is based on a 22.0 times multiple applied to their 2027 EBITDA estimate.
Okay.
D.A. Davidson is modeling a $500 target price, applying a 21 times multiple. Sidoti takes the most aggressive stance with a $505 target price, and that's based on a roughly 20 times multiple on a much higher 2027 EBITDA forecast of $768 million.
Wow, okay. What about the bears, or the more conservative estimates?
On the other end, William Blair is modeling a path to $429 to $470, keeping the multiple slightly more compressed between 18 and 20 times 2027 EBITDA.
So if you're an institutional investor listening to this, perfection is essentially priced into these models at 20 times forward EBITDA.
Pretty much.
The bull case is clear. The CEC electrical integration takes hold. The market realizes Sterling is a true mission-critical E&M platform, and the discount to Comfort Systems and Quanta just vanishes.
Right.
But at 20 times forward earnings, any slight deviation in the narrative causes violent multiple compression. What are the structural fault lines here? We have to look at the bear case.
The risks are definitely acute, and the AlphaSense expert interview provides some really vital ground-level perspective here. They actually interviewed a former Sterling project manager.
Oh, that's a great insight.
Yeah. And the immediate vulnerability highlighted was labor constraints. Finding the skilled electrical and mechanical workforce to reliably complete these increasingly complex interior data center projects is just a severe bottleneck across the entire industry.
Right, because you can buy the company, but you can't magically clone the master electricians required to actually do the work.
Precisely. And that ties directly into the second major risk the expert pointed out, which is competitive bidding and fixed price cost overruns.
Explain that, because we said hyperscalers care more about schedule than cost.
They do prioritize schedule, but these are still fundamentally construction contracts at the end of the day. If inflation spikes the cost of specialized electrical components, or if you have to pay massive overtime premiums just to secure that scarce skilled labor, and you are locked into a fixed price contract,
your margins take the hit.
Exactly. Those pristine 20% EBITDA margins can evaporate rapidly. Execution risk never truly leaves the construction sector. It just changes shape.
Yeah, that makes sense. There's also a severe macro sentiment-driven risk to consider here, too.
Oh, the AI sentiment.
Yeah, when you are valued purely as a derivative of the AI data center boom, your stock becomes hypersensitive to the capital expenditure outlooks of basically three or four major tech companies.
It's a huge concentration of sentiment risk. Stifel's initiation note points directly to this risk, framing it around data center sentiment. To understand the volatility here, Stifel highlighted that STRL shares fell roughly 50% from their peak during the so-called DeepSeek concerns in early 2025.
Specifically between January and April, right?
Yeah.
I mean, a 50% haircut in 3 months is staggering. The actual earnings didn't drop 50% in that quarter.
No, the earnings were totally fine. What dropped was the market's confidence in the duration of the AI infrastructure supercycle.
Right.
When reports surfaced that AI models might become more efficient, requiring, you know, less brute force compute power, the market briefly panicked that hyperscalers would just pause their massive data center buildouts.
And Sterling stock just tanked.
Yeah. That 50% drop shows you exactly how much beta is tied to a single secular narrative. If Meta, Amazon, or Google simply announce a six-month delay in their capital expenditure plans, Sterling's specialty premium will be violently tested.
The multiple compresses months before the actual earnings ever have a chance to miss.
Exactly.
That is the ultimate double-edged sword of being a proxy for a megatrend. It is incredibly lucrative on the way up, but the downside is almost entirely out of management's control.
Very true.
Which sort of brings us back to evaluating Joe Cutillo and his team.
Yeah.
Because you have to admit, Sterling presents a masterclass in business transformation.
Oh, undeniably.
Shedding a low-margin, heavy civil legacy to basically engineer a mission-critical infrastructure platform is an exceptional operational achievement. And it's underpinned by very real, verifiable metrics. The 70% free cash flow conversion and the disciplined M&A roll-up. Those are factual.
Yeah, for a portfolio manager weighing this position, the decision isn't just a simple screen for expensive versus cheap. It requires an active evaluation of whether management can flawlessly execute the operational integration required to actually defend that 21x multiple.
Right, because integrating a $505 million acquisition like CEC Facilities Group is not just a simple spreadsheet exercise.
Not at all. It requires merging completely disparate corporate cultures, retaining highly specialized electrical labor in a super tight market, and executing on the cross-selling thesis without, you know, dropping the ball on their legacy site prep execution.
But they do have the balance sheet to weather some friction, don't they?
They do. Exiting 2025 with a net cash position of around $100 million and leverage sitting at just 0.5 times provides immense financial flexibility.
Right, so they aren't stressed by debt service.
Exactly, which allows them to absorb potential project delays while still hunting for the next accretive acquisition. That balance sheet is really their primary defensive moat. It ensures that even if hyperscaler capital expenditures pause briefly, Sterling isn't forced into any distressed decision-making.
Which leaves us with a final puzzle to mull over as we wrap up this deep dive.
Let's hear it.
We've spent a lot of time detailing the mechanics of the multiple arbitrage flywheel, using a 21x equity currency to buy private companies at 5x to 9x EBITDA, instantly generating value on the balance sheet.
Yeah, the value creation machine.
But this entire engine relies on an endless pipeline of private market targets willing to sell their businesses at a massive discount to public market multiples. What happens when those private market sellers wake up to the math?
Oh, that is the ultimate question for literally any roll-up strategy.
Right. As Sterling, Quanta, EMCOR, and other specialty giants aggressively consolidate the E&M space, the supply of premium private targets shrinks. So will these private sellers begin demanding a much larger slice of that multiple arbitrage?
It's highly likely.
If a target that historically sold for 8 times suddenly demands 12 or 14 times EBITDA because they know exactly how valuable their electrical capabilities are to Sterling's cross-selling thesis, it permanently squeezes the golden acquisition window.
It totally threatens the very engine that has driven so much of Sterling's recent re-rating.
Exactly. So if you were projecting this out to 2027 and beyond, estimating the compression of that M&A spread is absolutely critical. Definitely something to model out as the mission-critical infrastructure space gets increasingly crowded.